Next. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
You're darn right we want winners. This is Pod Vader here with the super fans of what I believe is the most interesting division in the NFL this year. That is the NFC West. And when we are talking about winners, we're talking about the fact that I went out and made sure that our three open spots here in our last division preview were filled. And let me tell you, I went above and beyond. Before I introduce those three new ones, let me introduce the OG of the NFC West. That's Jared representing the Rams. What's up, Jared?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Pod.
And now, one of our newest super fans, a guy I've known for a few years now. I don't know how much he wants me to get into his background because he's got some shady things there. But the Arizona Cardinals super fan, Drew Brooks. Drew, what's going on?
I don't know if I'm really that shady, but happy to be here, man.
We're happy to have you. And now, in what was an interesting turn this week, our Seahawks superfan retired, which left an opening there. But more importantly, the 49ers retirements continued to happen as we lost our 49er superfan. You might think I went and got one guy, but no. Let me introduce to you Charlie, the 49ers superfan. He's Charlie with a Y. Charlie, what's happening?
Who's got it better than us, Pod?
I don't think there's anybody. And the man representing the losing team in the Super Bowl for the Seattle Seahawks, that is Charlie with an IE. What's happening, Charlie?
Hey, what's going on? Good to be here.
Glad to have you. All right, so that's all of our new superfans here in the NFC West. We're going to get into the division preview in just a moment. If you want to send us an email, please do nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Twitter @NFU Podcast and search us on Facebook, Next Fan Up, or just go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. A couple of things that happened this week before we get in the NFC West. One that happened yesterday here, Greg Hardy got his suspension reduced to 4 games, that down from 10. Many people pointing that this is good news for the Patriots and Tom Brady. I'll wait and see. I'm not holding my breath. But that is a significant reduction, gentlemen, for some domestic violence that Greg Hardy was accused of. What do you think this means here? Jared, we'll start with you.
I was kind of surprised because I thought they said the minimum was 6 games for domestic violence, although they imposed that right after he was charged. But that's a pretty significant reduction. I guess you could make the argument he sat out all last year, although he was paid. But yeah, I was pretty shocked it got knocked all the way down to 4. I thought maybe 8 or 6 games is what it was going to be.
Honestly, it's pretty ridiculous. At some point, you have to stick to what the punishment actually is and cut it out with this. Well, we're going to suspend you for the season, but on appeal, we're going to reduce it to 4 games. It's kind of a joke. Speaking of jokes that aren't really funny, the Cowboys and the Broncos right now are being investigated for collusion. Let's go to the radio producer, Drew Brooks, for more on that.
I mean, basically, the premise is, so Demaryius Thomas and Dez Bryant are quote-unquote free agents, right? Because of the franchise tag, they're not actually free. They have to basically sign with the Broncos or the Cowboys if they want to play this year, and neither team really wants to give their franchise receiver a big-time deal. So the thought of the NFLPA is that the two teams are talking to each other to make sure the deals are very similar so that neither team really has to open up the bank for the other. I don't know if there's any proof. If there is proof, then Dez and Thomas and the NFLPA will probably sue. If there is no proof, then this is just another one of those, you know, shady things that happens in the NFL that nobody can really do anything about.
Yeah, this is collusion's tough to prove, but I think in this particular instance, it's all going to come down to the proof in the when those contracts come out. Two more stories here. I saw my old buddy there, Ross Tucker. Fireworks are the new performance enhancing drugs in the NFL. As we had two injuries over the 4th of July. One was CJ Wilson, cornerback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He lost two fingers. So that'll make it interesting. At least he's a cornerback, so he doesn't have to catch the ball. But the other one that's a little bit more interesting is JPP, Jason Pierre-Paul, the Giants. He reportedly has lost a finger as well, but he wouldn't let the Giants come and see him, which I thought was very interesting. Charlie of the Seahawks, what do you think about JPP not talking to the Giants?
It seems a little shady to me. I mean, he's, you know, when you're a member of an organization and, I guess, he's a client of their organization, I think that they have a right to know, his physical health, especially when it's, you know, when it's a job such as a football player. I feel like your physical well-being should be, you know, known to, everyone, your employer, and also your bosses. So yeah, it seems a little shady that they wouldn't let him, that they, you know, wouldn't let the Giants see how they see how he was doing. Yeah, I don't know. That's my thoughts. Full disclosure, I think would be a little better, but I guess we'll let them deal with that internally. I'm sure we don't know everything about that. So,
Drew, what's been the scuttlebutt behind the scenes there?
Well, here's the thing. He never signed a franchise tender, so he's not actually part of a team. So he doesn't owe the Giants at this point anything. Now, if and when he signs the tender, he shows up to training camp, but the Giants aren't on the hook for anything until he passes the physical. He can't play until he passes the physical. What JPP is saying is that he's not ready to do that until he thinks he's ready to pass the physical, but the Giants are in a no-lose situation here, right? They don't. They took the max money, or not max money, but they took the big offer contract off the table because they haven't seen his hand. But they still have the tender out there. They still, if he signs a franchise tag, he still needs to pass the physical before he plays. So he's going to play for the Giants, or he's not going to play for anybody.
And then sad news, as we learned that Ken Stabler, the Hall of Fame quarterback for the Oakland Raiders, died this week at age 69. I did see an interesting, funny tweet. I think it was from Mortensen, that one of the stories about Ken Stabler is he took Veterans Day off for practice because he's a veteran, which I thought was a little interesting. And shortest of shows where the snake's head was at when it came to life and everything about it. But at least a smile on her face as we say goodbye to one of the greats. All right. On that depressing note, let's get into something a little bit more interesting, and that is our NFC West preview. We've got four teams here. All of them, at one point or another in the past few years, have been considered strong contenders, and we keep waiting for a couple of the teams on the bottom end of this division to sort of rise up. And this seems to be the season where that may happen. But before we even get to talking about them, we do have to talk about the Super Bowl losers in Seattle, Charlie, because I think your team is still probably king of this division.
Yeah, let's hope so. I still got a little PTSD from that game. I'm not going to lie. Jay was flipping me a little crap over email about it because big Patriots fans, I guess, on this podcast. I mean, my first thoughts when the season schedule came out was, wow, like we have a really tough schedule. Not only is our division tough, you know, with St. Louis, Zona, and the Niners, but then I looked at our non-division opponents, and we got, you know, we got Detroit. We got Dallas on the road. We got Pitt. We have Baltimore on the road. Even the Vikings could be tough on the road. Cincy. So I mean, I'm a little nervous just with the schedule. Green Bay on the road as well. Well, I forgot about that one. That's tough. But, you know, that being said, you know, Vegas still has our over-under wins total at 11, so it's a little assuring to me. I like that. You know, you mentioned that we were still probably heavy favorites just because our team is basically the same. The big blow for us was losing Max Unger, our center. But, you know, losing Max Unger meant we got Jimmy Graham, which filled a huge void for us. I think everybody can agree after Russell Wilson's one-yard interception pass that we could use a red zone target this year. I think our tiny wide receivers and Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse, Lockett, I think every fan wanted to see a big body that Russell could throw to in the end zone. So I think everyone's pretty excited that we have that now in Jimmy.
All right. Well, we'll get more in depth on the position battles here in this division. And as we look to see who might challenge Seattle for that top spot, I might have been inclined to go to the 49ers had the 49ers team not retired this year. So I'll go right to Drew Brooks and the upstart Arizona Cardinals. And I don't even know if we can call them upstarts anymore. It's been two seasons in a row now that the Cardinals have been a thorn in the side in this division.
I was going to say upstart is not very fair. I mean, this is a team that went 10-6 and 11-5 in Bruce Arians' first 2 years. Last year was a joke after Carson Palmer got hurt. I mean, obviously, this team is going to run on Carson Palmer. If he is healthy, then they will be good. He had, 10 or 11 touchdowns to three interceptions? 11 touchdowns to three interceptions in six games last year. They only had 10 touchdown passes in the rest of the season, the last 10 games, and that playoff game. I mean, this offense was atrocious after Carson Palmer went down. But it wasn't just Palmer. It was Andre Ellington. I mean, this team was really, really, really hurt. They revamped the offensive line. I think the biggest missing piece is going to be, a corner. But other than that, with Darrell Washington coming back, if he ever gets reinstated, the Cardinals are going to be a force. I mean, they're going to win 10 games again. That might not be good enough to win the division, but nobody's going to want to play this team.
But are they going to be able to stay healthy? I mean, you said they got to run on Carson Palmer. He's been injured more seasons than not here at the end of his run. And you've got Andre Ellington, who's still unproven.
I don't know about Andre Ellington still being unproven. I mean, you know, they drafted Johnson. I mean, I don't think Andre Ellington was ever going to be a 25-touch back, and they tried to use him that way because they didn't have any other options. But I wouldn't say that he's unproven. I mean, this is a guy that can hit a home run every time he steps on the ball or he gets the ball. Carson is a big question mark. I mean, this is a guy that went down with no contact. He has a history of injuries. I don't think anybody's really relying on Carson Palmer. Maybe Drew Stanton got a little bit better in the offseason. You're not winning with Drew Stanton, especially in the playoffs. But, yeah, I mean, if Carson Palmer is healthy, then this is going to be a really good team.
49er Charlie, I just got a report. Another player retired. I mean, do you have enough of a team with new head coach Jim Tomsula to keep that second place or even challenge for the top spot in this division?
Well, listen, I mean, Trent Baalke has foreseen this, you know. So in the last three drafts, he's taken several what's called red shirt players that have had injuries that he's been able to plug in, you know, in a lot of these spots where we lost players. We of course, you know, the Marcus Lattimore experience didn't work out, as many of you might have read with the article that came out in SB Nation. But, I mean, for the most part, Patrick Willis, you know, only participated in 32% of snaps last year. So the guy wasn't on the field anyway. His replacement, Michael Wilhoit, was in for 96.9% of snaps. So he was literally on the field every defensive snap. So Michael Wilhoit stepping in isn't really stepping in. He played all last year. Same thing with, Navarro Bowman. A lot of people said in 2013 pre-injury that he should have been the defensive player of the year over Kuechly. So we're getting him back after two full years basically off. So, or a year and a half, I should say. So yeah, I feel very confident in my team going into this year. I love the fact that we are not thought of as the hunted. We are the hunters. All the expectations are down on the Niners. It feels a lot like, when Carroll first took over the Seahawks and he cleaned house. You know, it feels a lot like we do have a much more positive coaching staff rather than the kind of overbearing Harbaugh. Don't get me wrong. I really liked Harbaugh and was very, very sad when he left. But in seeing all the reports out of camp, I'm very optimistic about this team.
As you should be as a super fan, unlike Tom, the Chicago Bears super fan, who basically threw his team under the bus during his division preview. By the way, if you've missed any of our division previews, just check us out, blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup, or you can download us on iTunes. We have previewed every single division so far this preseason, so don't be afraid. Go download them. Go comment. Do all that great stuff. Speaking of comments, the one team the experts seem to comment on quite a bit this offseason, and they're sort of like the sleeper pick, the darling pick, if you will, and that is the St. Louis Rams, Jared. And I'm curious to see what the fan reaction is right now, as the Rams are a team that everybody seems to love this season.
Cautiously optimistic. I want to actually see them win more than 7 games before I'm really high on them. But I mean, they've won a lot of games the last 2 seasons with Austin Davis, Sean Hill, and Kellen Clemens at quarterback. And they played in a really tough division with one of the top toughest schedules the last 3 years. So I know Nick Foles isn't a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, but he'll seem like one compared to the quarterback they've been throwing out there the last 2 seasons after Bradford's been hurt. So if they can just get like league average play at quarterback and have some of their young players on offense just kind of take the next step, I'm excited about Todd Gurley and some of their, and if Brian Quick is healthy, I think they can be just average on offense, and their defense is going to be loaded with Chris Long healthy now and adding Nick Fairley in the middle and Akeem Ayers rushing the passer. I think they could easily lead the league in sacks this year. So I'm hoping they're better, but again, I'm not going to be too optimistic till they actually get the wins out there.
I think defense is definitely a strength on the Rams for sure, under the tutelage of Jeff Fisher. He's always been had strong defenses with the teams that he's coached. He's a defensive minded coach. It would make a lot of sense. Let's go back though to the quarterbacks, and in a division where I don't necessarily know if there's a quarterback in this division you could call elite, but there's quite a few that are right on that cusp. I would put Russell Wilson right there. Carson Palmer is probably pretty close. I don't know why I'm getting phone calls in the middle of a podcast. That happens all the time, of course. Nick Foles is I don't know, maybe close. And Colin Kaepernick seems to be one of those up and down guys. Who has the best quarterback in this division? Charlie of the Seahawks.
I mean, I don't know how there's any argument about this one. I don't think any of the other quarterbacks have gone to any Super Bowls or won a Super Bowl in the division.
Yeah, okay.
Russell has, 2 Super Bowl appearances in his first 2 years in the league. Most likely going to get a most likely he'll be the richest player probably in the NFL by the time the season starts. We hope in Seattle. If not, we're kind of worried. I gotta say Russell Wilson is the guy. I don't know. Carson Palmer has been great when he's been healthy. That's the one team that I'm worried about the most this year, just because of Carson, if he can stay healthy the whole year. But Nick Foles for me has been super up and down in this play. Kaepernick has flashes of brilliance, but I don't think he's a leader.
49ers, Charlie, I heard you give out a sigh.
retort.
Oh, it was just the he corrected it. He said no other quarterback's been to a Super Bowl. But yeah, definitely Kaepernick has, and was really one play away from the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, regardless of the lights going out. But yes, one play away. Obviously, I know the Seahawks super fan knows how that feels. So we can condole. We can take in each other or condole one another. Yes. So obviously Russell Wilson's in my mind is the best quarterback in this division. Although I really got to say second place has to be Colin Kaepernick. You know, Carson Palmer, you never know what three-step drop is going to result in another knee injury. Plus, you don't know how he's going to look like this season after coming off that knee injury in what, week 14 or 15, I believe. I've heard that they've allowed him to do some 7-on-7 drills down in Arizona, but who knows? I mean, you know, injuries like that, you could bounce back from very well, but then older Carson Palmer, who knows? So, yeah, I got Colin Kaepernick second, and then Carson, and then Nick Foles, because he's going to be wanted, you know, or leaned upon to pass a bit more than he did there in Philly when he had that that two interception year. So that's my take.
Drew Brooks, your quarterback's been put on blast a couple times here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything that's been said has been unfair. I mean, obviously, I take offense to the fact that you think there's been one quote-unquote elite quarterback in the division. I mean, it's only Russell Wilson. He's going to get paid like it. He's not the best quarterback in the NFL, but he's the only elite quarterback in this division. I don't even think it's a question. Kaepernick's okay. The fact that you even debated whether or not Foles is elite makes me want to just scream. but, yeah, I mean, head and shoulders above everybody else in this division is Russell Wilson.
All right, Jared, what I mean, Nick Foles is your quarterback. Help me out here.
Yeah, I mean, he was elite if you look at his 2013 season where he had 27 touchdowns and two interceptions, but he came back to earth last year, and although he was 6-2 as an Eagle starter and Sanchez was only 4-4, so I mean, I just think Chip Kelly didn't like him as much and like Sam Bradford a lot better, so that's why he traded him. But I'd say, he's not elite. Although he's young and he could get better, I could see him maybe getting to top 12, top 10-ish quarterback if everything broke right. But, yeah, in terms of the division, Russell Wilson's number one. I have Kaepernick, too. I think he's an elite athlete. If he has the right coaching and maybe in a year or two he could take step to be maybe a top 10 quarterback. And Carson Palmer, I mean, as a Rams fan with Sam Bradford coming off two ACLs, like he's great when he's healthy, but that's what everyone always said about Sam Bradford. So, and he's pretty old in terms of NFL quarterbacks. So I don't know how much Palmer has left in the tank.
All right, well, at the running back position, there's definitely no argument that it begins and ends with beast mode, although he is a little bit older now. But again, when you look at the depth charts of the rest of the teams in this division, it's unproven guys or lunch pail guys or Andre Ellington, who doesn't know how to stay healthy and isn't a 25 down touchback, as Drew said earlier. So the question is, which team in this division has the number two running back?
I think it has to be Andre Ellington. I mean, it could end up being Todd Gurley. But I don't understand how it's not Andre Ellington. I mean, he had a hernia. It's not like this guy's like injury prone, right? He had some form of a hernia and ended up ending his season. But I just, what he was doing before he got hurt. I mean, he had over 1,000 all purpose yards, 660 rushing yards, almost 400 yards receiving, 5 touchdowns. I mean, this guy is no joke. It's just, he's kind of small and he's not beast mode. You can't give him the ball 30 times a game.
Anybody want to take down Andre Ellington as number two? Going once?
I was going to say, I'd take Todd Gurley over Andre Ellington any day. I mean, yeah, he's coming
out. You haven't even seen him play yet.
I know, but he's definite. I don't know. I haven't seen him play in the NFL, but watching his tape in college and pretty much every draft expert said he's the best talent to come out since Adrian Peterson. Yeah, I haven't seen him play, but I haven't seen Andre Ellington play a full season either. So
yeah, but this guy's coming off of an ACL injury. Like, I'm not saying he's not going to be good, but I mean, he's a rookie. Like, he hasn't even touched the ball yet. How could he be the second best? He might even be the best on his own team.
That's a good point.
Well, he couldn't. If you're looking at team-wise, I would take the combination of Trey Mason and Todd Gurley, because I think, especially this year, they're going to split carries, and they're two people. I mean, Todd Gurley, when he's healthy, and both of them will be able to run it 20, 25 times a game, no problem. But yeah, you can't say that about Andre Ellington. And, I mean, Carlos Hyde is decent. I mean, again, I think there's Lynch and then a bunch of young guys who could be great, and actually – a year from now, the Seahawks could have the worst running backs in the division if Lynch gets injured or retires. So, but yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm high on Todd Gurley and Trey Mason. I think they're a good combination, and the Rams are going to be one of the few teams in the NFL to actually run more than pass. But yeah, I just think Ellington is a great complementary back, but you need a bigger guy to, if you combine him with a big guy that could run 20 times and then give Ellington at 15 touches a game, I think he'd be great. But I just don't think he can hold up as a feature back.
I agree. I would have if you guys would have traded for AP in a Cardinals uniform, that would have been scary, very scary. So, yeah, I think that, you know, really Carlos Hyde is the second running back in this division just because, yeah, he's touted the ball. And he was hit behind the line of scrimmage more than any other back in the NFL last year. Although, yeah, small sample size because he was behind Frank Gore. But with all that, you know, terrible line play in front of him, he still averaged over 3 yards a carry. So, you know, in my mind, with the Niners switching to the zone blocking scheme where Carlos Hyde was familiar with there in Ohio State, I feel like going into the 2015 season, he's the one that I'm looking at. Now, the caveat, of course, is Todd Gurley. But is he going to start the year on the IR designated to return list? I don't know.
I also don't understand why you have to be a 30 carry back to be elite. Like Andre Ellington, so they drafted David Johnson, and David Johnson might not be good. He might be good, but he's a big 6'1", 225 back. From Northern Iowa, he's going to spell Andre Ellington. I mean, this idea that you need to be a 30 or 25 carry back, I mean, most teams don't have one running back that they use. I mean, Andre Ellington is head above heels better than Carlos Hyde. He might not be better than Todd Gurley when it's all said and done, but this team can run the ball. They're going to run the ball this year.
Your yards per carry were last, like one of the last in the NFL. If you're not going to get a lot of carries, you have to be good in yards per carry, right?
But why were the Cardinals one of the last in yards per carry in the NFL?
Bad offensive line along with the Niners.
I was going to say quarterback, right? When your quarterback is Ryan Lindley or Drew Stanton, that means you have 9 and 10 guys in the box. So the defenses were bringing the house. That's why these running backs were never able to get anything going. I think with Carson Palmer, it opens up the running game a little bit because he's able to clear the field and pass the ball.
Yeah,
somebody went for a ride there. They took the offensive line with them. Speaking of offensive lines, I mean, Drew, why don't you address your offensive line issue? I mean, the Cardinals stole one of the 49ers guys.
Yeah, I think this line is going to be better. I mean, Jared Valdir, I mean, you never really know, but getting Ayupati from the 49ers is big, and hopefully Jonathan Cooper will continue to get better. I mean, they got Larson at center. This is not a great offensive line. Bobby Massey is like a freaking revolving door at right tackle. But again, I mean, Carson Palmer, if he's healthy, should at least be able to mask some of the deficiencies. They're going to be better than they've been in the past, and I think that's what Keim and Arians really tried to address this offseason, was to get better, protect the quarterback, and open up some running lanes. But they're not elite.
I mean, which offensive line in this division doesn't have questions? I think every single line in this division has to have some sort of question.
There's only two or three teams that don't have question marks on the offensive line in the whole league.
the Seahawks' big, you know, off-season deal that everyone knows about was trading Unger to the Saints and our first-round pick for Jimmy Graham. So every Seahawks fan kind of cringed, you know, when we lost Unger. He was a fan favorite, and obviously when you have Russell Wilson behind center, you're going to care about who's snapping the ball to him. But I think Pete and Schneider have a lot of faith in, you know, the two backups that we've had behind Unger for the last couple of years, Jean-Pierre and then this Patrick Lewis. So the position battle, I don't think it's totally shaken out with those two guys yet. But, you know, I think that's the biggest question mark with us. And hopefully those two guys will fill in okay.
Charlie 49er, talk about your line.
So I think it all starts with the highest rated PFF left tackle in the division being Joe Staley, you know, and especially with the high value contract that they have him on relative to how elite, you know, in my mind, Joe Staley is. And then, yes, there's a lot of question marks after that. But in losing Michael Potty, yeah, that's going to hurt in the road grading ground game that we would typically do in our power running. But he gave up 7 sacks last year. You know, having him go to Arizona, if they pass at all, that scares me to have someone getting a free rush on Carson Palmer because that's what I saw really all year from the left side of the line there. So actually happy to see him gone. Then we have Brandon Thomas, who we drafted last year as part of our red shirt program that Balky has. Should be stepping in at left guard is where I project him. Then Daniel Kilgore, who was actually a top 10 center last year. Then Marcus Martin, who's actually slimming down from when he was wanted to be a big Michael Potty type of guard. They're trying to get him to slim down so that way we can run our zone blocking scheme behind him there at right guard. And then Alex Boone's going to kick out to right tackle. Alex Boone hasn't given up more than 3 sacks his entire NFL or more than 3 sacks in a year his entire NFL career. So I feel like we're going to have a much better line as long as everyone stays healthy. They should be cohesive and, you know, able to get us back up there in lines. We're never going to be the Cowboys, but hopefully we can be at least best in this division.
Jared, the Rams have definitely invested a lot in their defensive line. What about their offensive line?
Well, their offensive line last year, I think, was the second worst in the NFL by Pro Football Focus. So they got rid of 4 of their starters, Davin Joseph, Jake Long, Scott Wells, and I can't remember their tackle. Oh, Joe Barksdale. So basically, 3 of those guys, nobody's signed, and the other one got a 1-year, $1 million contract. So that shows how bad their line was. So they have a lot of – they drafted 4 linemen, and then they actually just picked up 1 on Wednesday in the supplemental draft as they had battle. So they have a lot of youth on their line. So lots of question marks. By far the biggest worry I have for the Rams. But I mean, at least they know it's their problem and they're addressing it in the draft. But yeah, I think they could have a lot of growing pains this year, and that's probably their biggest weakness.
So most teams keep 10 offensive linemen on their roster, and you have 5 rookies.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I mean, their center, they have a couple young guys that have a little bit of experience in center that might be okay. But and also, I mean, they have the number 2 overall pick in last year's draft, Greg Robinson. I think he'll be better this year. And I've always been a big Roger Saffold fan, but the other 3 positions on the line are probably either going to be rookies or like second or third year players that have just a few starts on their belt. So I'm just hoping that by drafting 5 people that 2 or 3 of them will hit, and yeah, there'll be a lot of competition, but yeah, definitely a big area of concern.
I mean, we haven't even gotten to the defense yet, and we're about to talk about the wide receiving corps for these teams, but I don't get why the Rams are everybody's darling, because you really haven't sold me much on the Rams so far in every position.
Well, and their offense is where their weakness is. Their defense is where they're great. But, yeah, I think their offense is, as sad as all these stats are, they're going to be better. They can't be, unless they're the worst team in the league, they won't have the worst line. And the quarterback's going to be better. And Todd Gurley's an upgrade over Zach Stacy. And their young wide receivers will be better. But, yeah, I mean, their offense has tons of questions. But it will be better than the worst, if that makes any sense.
I guess we'll have to see. We may have to, maybe next week when we do the super fan all first team and second team, we'll see how many Rams end up in that on those highly prestigious teams, the super fan all first team. Drew Brooks, I believe the best wide receiving core is in Arizona, at least in this division. And I don't think there's a question about it.
Listen, I love Larry Fitzgerald. Michael Floyd got a lot better last year. The Jimmy Graham dynamic in Seattle scares the bejesus out of me, especially since the Cardinals have had a really, really, really hard time guarding tight ends. And he's as good as a receiver as anybody in the league. But yeah, I think you look around this division and Fitzgerald and Floyd are probably the two best wideouts that are there.
Man.
Charlie 49er, go for it.
I'm a fan of First Down Bolden. His first name is not Anquan. I mean, because every third down, Kaepernick is looking for Bolden and he converts.
But you don't
Fitzgerald is by far the
Fitzgerald.
Not in their primes. Fitzgerald is better in his prime for sure. But Fitzgerald,
you think Bolden's closer
off
to his prime than Fitzgerald is to his prime?
He's definitely not. But if you look at their production, he is.
Their production is because of the quarterback. You guys, once Carson Palmer went out, I mean, there was nothing that they could do. Fitzgerald is still a beast. Like, Bolden is good. I mean, Bolden was really good with Arizona. But Bolden hasn't been great since before he left for Baltimore.
Oh, I don't know about
Jimmy
that.
Jimmy Graham is the best receiver, and he's a tight end in this division. And Fitzgerald's got to be two. And Michael Floyd is probably better than Anquan Bolden.
I will give Michael Floyd. I agree with the Michael Floyd. But I think Fitzgerald is off of different press clippings. Because when Lindley came in, he was throwing to the rookie, right? Your rookie speedster. Can't remember his name off the top of my head. But if a receiver is truly transcendent, shouldn't it be, you know, the ability to throw to that wide receiver, whether he's really open or not? That's what Larry Fitzgerald was able to make his name on, you know, being able to catch those jump balls. I don't see him as high as what he was before. I know once Carson went down, no one would throw to him anymore, but you would think that wouldn't be an issue.
No, I mean, he's doing double and triple cover, but when you don't have a quarterback that can make any throw, then there's nothing to it. I mean, the reason why John Brown had
but he did make throws
was because he was wide open. Well, he was wide open. It's easy to throw a wide open receiver. Fitzgerald's never open. There's always two guys on Fitzgerald because teams know how good he is. Listen, like, he's old. He's not as good as he used to be. I don't want to make it seem like I'm arguing that. But if you look at the receivers in this division, the 49ers would trade their entire core just for Larry Fitzgerald.
No. I don't agree with that at all. Especially with Torrey Smith. I don't agree with that at all.
I was about to say, you haven't even mentioned Torrey Smith and Vernon Davis. Those are probably two bigger arguments for you, Charlie. Come on, man. You're going toe-to-toe with Drew Brooks. Keep it up.
I watched 16 games of Anquan Bolden. I think in my mind, Anquan Bolden is second behind Floyd. So that's how I feel. In just the straight wide receiver position, if we're talking overall wide receiver, I agree with you. Jimmy Graham is very tough to beat.
And Seahawks, Charlie, you've been quiet, but Drew Brooks did throw you a bone and mentioned Jimmy Graham in your wide receiving core. I mean, you guys did make it to the playoffs with those wide receivers. I mean, they've got to get better this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm kind of the only guy in the division that, like, doesn't have to defend my wide receivers as much because, I mean, Russell Wilson, since he's been in the league,
has never really had a star wide receiver to throw to, and it's just never really been an issue for us. I mean, I guess the closest thing we've had to a star wide receiver in the past, like, 5 or 6 years is maybe Golden Tate. We had Sidney Rice, too, and that obviously didn't work out. I mean, you know, I don't think anyone's going to say we have bad receivers, but I don't think anyone's going to say we have, you know, star receivers. But at the same time, it's worked for Russell. He can make it work. You know, Doug Baldwin's going to be back. He's going to be solid. Jermaine Kearse is going to be solid. The guy that I'm most interested in, actually, is the kid that we drafted out of Kansas State, Tyler Lockett. Who we actually traded up for in the third round. A lot of analysts said that he was one of the best picks in the entire draft. So I'm interested to see how much playing time he's going to get. Everybody kind of saw what Chris Matthews did in the Super Bowl. He was amazing. Getting back to Jimmy, it's going to be pretty fun for all Seahawks fans to see Russell Wilson with, like, a legit star, you could say wide receiver or tight end, that he can throw to, because he's never really had a star to throw to. That could be a pretty scary, scary combination there with Russell and Jimmy.
Jared, I'm not even going to let you talk about your wide receivers because there's no point.
Hold on, Jay. I want to say one thing. Just on this whole wide receiver thing. So fantasy rankings don't matter, right? Preseason rankings especially. But I'm still going to use them to strengthen my argument here. Both Michael Floyd and Larry Fitzgerald are rated higher in all fantasy preseason rankings. I'm looking at fantasypros.com right now than both Torrey Smith and Anquan Boldin. Both of those guys are rated behind Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd when all you're doing is projecting offensive output.
So I love how you start your argument with these rankings mean nothing, but I'm going to use them anyway. I believe that was the entire Deflategate report. These rankings mean nothing, but we're going to use them anyway. That was fantastic. All right. Rams, you guys have maybe some up and comer wide receivers. I doubt it. Everybody's been waiting for those wide receivers to explode, and it's just not going to happen. But where you are very strong and perhaps have the best in the NFL, never mind this division, is your defensive line.
Yeah, our defensive line, last year, Chris Long was basically either hurt or not even close to 100% all year. So having a full year of him and Robert Quinn at both ends with, just imagine them on the ends and then Aaron Donald and Nick Fairley coming at you on third and long. And then you could probably have Akeem Ayers blitzing or Rodney or TJ McDonald blitzing or some crazy blitz that that Greg Williams has schemed up. So, yeah, their defensive line is going to be – and they have – I mean, as I'm mentioning, Michael Brockers, William Hayes, who would be – starters on just any team in the NFL. So they're just going to be rotating them and coming after you. So I'm really, really excited to see what they got in store with their defensive line this year.
I mean, Drew, your Cardinals have been strong on defense too. What do you have to say about your front seven there?
I think the front seven is going to be pretty good. I mean, they've improved in linebacker. Here's the thing. We don't know what we're kind of Darrell Washington we're going to get. Like, if Darrell Washington gets reinstated and comes back and is the Pro Bowler that he was before the suspension, then they're going to be that much better. I think the strength of this defense is the secondary, although losing Cromartie is probably going to hurt a little bit.
In Seattle there, Charlie, you lost your defensive coordinator and you've lost a couple of, rotational players on that defensive front seven. I mean, how are you feeling about your defensive front seven right now?
I'm still feeling pretty good about it. I mean, we still have Cliff Averill up front. I think that Bruce Irvin is going to continue to
to get a lot better. He's shown like flashes of brilliance as being a top pick. You know, Michael Bennett, still have Michael Bennett, still have Mebane, KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner. So, I mean, we're getting the bulk of our guys back. The thing that I'm most worried about probably is the secondary, with losing Byron Maxwell, and having, you know, having him gone. But I'm feeling pretty good about the front seven this year.
Don't jump too far ahead. We'll get to the Legion of Boom. But the 49ers, their 49er Charlie, this is where I think all the retirements are really going to show their ugly head for the 49ers. I mean, you lost three starters, right, to retirement?
The front seven, that would be technically three, yeah, because with Chris Borland. But before we take a step forward, let me take a step back. So for stats that do matter, PFF rating for NFC West wide receivers, Anquan Boldin, Doug Baldwin, Stevie Johnson, Stedman Bailey, Larry Fitzgerald, Kenny Britt, Michael Floyd. So they're down there. And if we're talking about stats that do matter, actually it shows the Seahawks have the second best wide receiver in the division. The only reason why we don't think that the Seahawks wide receiver crew is decent is because they run the majority of the time. So back step forward into the Niners D-line. Justin Smith only played 66% of snaps last year. Tony Gerard Eddy played 40% of snaps and actually had a PFF grading of just over positive. So I don't necessarily think he's going to be taking Justin Smith's role, but I think a guy named Glenn Dorsey is. So the Niners have been, really stacking their defensive line for Justin Smith retiring the past two or three off seasons. So they bring in Glenn Dorsey. They have Ian Williams, whose PFF grade last year was over 12.4, who's going to play the nose tackle. They're going to bump Glenn Dorsey to the other side. And then Darnell Dockett, we'll see how he is coming off that ACL, but because it was a preseason injury, he should be good to go by camp.
All right, back to you, Charlie Seahawks. You brought up the Legion of Boom. I still think you've got the best second, well, minus the Jets, probably the best secondary here in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot's changed. We still got Sherm. Sherm on the outside, and but you know, we did lose Maxwell, but they came in and got a pretty good free agent and Kerry Williams from Philly, so through, you know, he's a solid veteran, he's been on Philly and Baltimore, and then, you know, obviously in the middle, Cam Chancellor's just going to continue to be a beast. Earl Thomas. You know, what's going to be interesting with the Legion of Boom is, you know, not this year, I think everyone can agree, but the next, you know, two or three years out, because, you know, with Russell Wilson's contract coming up, you know, it's going to be tough to keep all these guys together. You know, there's going to be some spots where, you know, if Cam and Earl are signed, you know, it might be tough for us to keep a guy like Cliff Averill or, you know, some guys on the defensive front. And even guys like, you know, like KJ Wright and you know, Mebane are just like solid role players, you know, that fill in the gaps. So
Drew, Patrick Peterson always comes up in the conversation about best cornerback in the NFL. It's interesting that two of those guys are in this division, with Richard Sherman being the other guy being mentioned often in those conversations. What about the rest of your secondary? I know you got a safety with a cool nickname, but what can you tell me about the rest of the Cardinal secondary?
I mean, he's not even their best safety, but I don't know. I just, I'm still on the, we use stats to tell me that the Seahawks have a better wide receiver than it. Like this, Doug Baldwin is better than him. I mean, I don't want to get into the Patrick Pearson.
That's PFF.
Sherman. Yeah, sure, right. Hey, I'm not just even throw that I'm away. Like, holy, throw that stuff away. Listen, Sherman, Peterson, I still think Revis is the best.
I like what Patrick Peterson provides to this team. This secondary is really good. I mean, losing Cromartie was a stand-up corner that really played well for the Cardinals last year. Losing that is going to hurt. But Deion Buchanan, who they drafted 2 years ago, is a hard-hitting safety. It reminds us of Adrian Wilson. I mean, he can play. This secondary, this whole defense is good. The secondary is second best in the division.
Charlie 49er, what can you tell me about your secondary? It looks like the strength of it is in your safeties.
Oh, definitely. Antoine Bethea was really the MVP of the team last year. Had his PFF ratings down here, but I seem to have lost it.
Because you're too busy worried about the wide receivers, which don't compare to the Cardinals. I have to tell you, just doesn't. Let's lay that to rest right now.
And the thing is there's the narrative that they're really good, but the stats don't really bear it out. So, but with the Niners secondary, I got to say they're probably either second worst or worse in the division because, you know, we really only have one corner returning that didn't really play much all of last year in Tremaine Brock. So we'll see how that goes, you know, but I think what the Niners are going to do is they're taking a page out of Arizona's book. Todd Bowles last year. And, of course, Darnell Dockett go down in training camp, had the Washington suspension. And then he decided to really think outside the box. He brought in a three or four safety look. And the Niners are going to try to do that as well. So, of course, they have Jimmy Ward, their first round pick that they had last year. And then this Jawoski Tart guy who really, if you tilt your head sideways a little bit, he looks a little bit like Cam Chancellor. He's a big, hard hitting safety. Who really has some, you know, kind of Deion Buchanan type of traits? Then the Honey Badger, of course, we would say that's you know, going to be a poor man's, or Jimmy Ward would be a poor man's Honey Badger. So that's what they're going to attempt to do. I foresee them in passing downs having four safeties on the field and bringing a lot of pressure, which Mangini is known for. So, you know, we'll see. They could be improved, or if they can't stop the run in that same defensive formation, they could get out of it very quickly. So we'll see.
All right, Jared, tell me something about this St. Louis Rams secondary, because I don't recognize a lot of these names, although Janoris Jenkins he's clearly somebody I need to know.
Yeah, Janoris Jenkins, I think he has 6 defensive touchdowns in his first 3 years. So he's a high-risk, high-reward type of guy. He gets burned a lot. That play against Brandon Lloyd on Monday Night Football, I still can't get that out of my head, how they let him get an 80-yard touchdown with like 10 seconds left before halftime. But I think he's still pretty good above average. I mean, because the Cardinals and the Seahawks have such great secondaries, the Rams probably have the third best in this division, but they're young, and I really like TJ McDonald. He's definitely an up-and-comer. He's really hard-hitting, smart. The problem with the Rams are they have 3 really good, strong safety type of guys and no free safety, so nobody can really cover other safety, but that's definitely their weakness. If they could shore up their coverage on the back end, I think they could easily be top 10, maybe even top 5 defense. But they're young, and I think a second year under the bounty gate, Greg Williams, will definitely help them.
All right, it is prediction time. Seattle, I started saying that you are the kings of this division. You are the Super Bowl losers. I still think you'll be the kings of this division. Am I way too soon, game by game? Don't hold me to these because I'm not really keeping track of my numbers and my win losses. I've got you at 11-5. What do you think about that?
I would love to be 11-5 at the end of the year with this schedule. I was leaning more towards like 10-6, maybe, but. I mean, I think that's a fair prediction. I think Vegas has us at like 10.5 or 11.5 for wins. You know, not if that's any argument at all. But I mean, the key games I have you know, looking at the schedule, I think Green Bay on the road is going to be tough. I think Dallas on the road is going to be tough. You know, and then with us, you always have to sprinkle in at least a few divisional games that, you know, we're going to lose probably, you know, maybe not at home. We'll probably only have one loss at home the whole season, maybe two. But, you know, just we're going to have one or two losses to, you know, maybe the Niners or maybe St. Louis. So I think 11-5 might be a little optimistic, but not, you know, not terrible.
You know, when I look at the schedule that you have, I mean, you do start the season two games away at the Rams, at the Packers. And of course,
right.
The question will be, which Rams team is it going to be, the darling Rams team that everyone's talking about? Or is it going to be the same old Rams? Then you get to host Chicago and Detroit. I mean, I would probably look at week 7 and 8 when you're at San Francisco and then at Dallas as a tough stretch. But then you do get a bye to sort of give you that break. And then you host the Cardinals and the 49ers and the Steelers. So that bye week does come at an opportune time for you in week 9. Yeah, Drew Brooks.
We didn't even touch on Carolina, actually. They're going to be a really tough game, too. Maybe.
I don't know how tough it'll be for the Seahawks. Drew Brooks, I looked over your schedule real quick. I've got you at 8-8, which I think is low.
So then why do you have us at 8-8?
Because that's what it came out to when I was doing win losses. I don't know why it came out that way, but what do you think?
I'm 8-8 too. I mean, everybody is talking about how they have tough schedules. I just think that nobody really likes the opponents on the menu. The Cardinals are not the toughest schedule in the league, but it's not easy. I mean, Saints, Bears, 49ers, Rams, two division games in the first 4 weeks. If the offense isn't gelling, it could be a slow start. I like this team to win double-digit games simply because I think this team has improved, and Bruce Arians has always at least won 10 games as a head coach. I mean, the Cardinals play the Seahawks in week 10, coming off of a bye, and I think that's going to be a really important game for this division. You're in the middle of November, and at that point, the Cardinals will only have, you know, they'll have three more division games, including the Seahawks at the end of the season. But that could really be a turning point in who's going to win this division. Week 10 in Seattle.
That's a primetime game too, isn't it?
Probably
it's a Sunday night game. Yeah.
Week 10 in Seattle is in fact an NBC Sunday night game. So
yeah,
we'll look forward to that battle of the superfans in the middle of the season. We're going to go to the Rams now with you, Jared. What do you foresee your schedule here with the St. Louis Rams?
Yeah, the NFC West is a pretty tough schedule playing the AFC North. I would say, gosh, it wouldn't be a Rams season if they weren't 7-9 or 8-8, but I would say probably they're going to be 8-8 just looking at their schedule again. I mean, unless Nick Foles and Todd Gurley really take a step. I mean, they got a lot of winnable games on their schedule, but they always seem to beat a really good team like the Broncos or the Seahawks and then just lose like so many maddening games. So I think their defense will keep them in most games. They won't really get blown out, but yeah, I'd say probably 8-8 and maybe 9-7 if everything comes together.
Well, your opener is against the Seahawks at home. You would hope that the home field advantage comes through for you there. And then you're at Washington. So, you know, you do get a reprieve week 2, but I think the tough stretch is home versus Pittsburgh, then away at Arizona, away at Green Bay, and then you thankfully get a bye week. But those first 5 games are going to be really tough for the Rams to keep it up. I've got you guys at 7-9, which you said is probably a typical Rams season for you.
Yeah, they have 4 of their first 5 games are really tough. And I mean, last year they had a stretch where they played 8 weeks in a row with no byes against all teams that were in the playoffs or the Cardinals who were 10-6. So, I mean, they're not strangers to tough schedules. But yeah, if they start off 1-4, which is amount of possibility. I mean, they are playing Pittsburgh at home without Le'Veon Bell, so I think they could maybe steal that one if his suspension isn't reduced. But, yeah, it's a tough stretch to start for sure.
Charlie, 49ers, what are you looking at with your schedule?
So, you know, a lot of people have talked about, you know, hard schedules. The Niners with their opponents and, of course, when the games are or the bye week before, you know, they're tough games. Actually have a top five hardest schedule in the league, even though we finished, third in the division last year. So we start the first four games versus the upstart Vikings, the Lev Bell-less Steelers, and then we go play the Cardinals, and we have the Packers at home. And the Packers have to beat us eventually. I mean, I know we've just been destroying Packers the last 4 years, and eventually they're going to beat us. But I have us – we're a boom or bust team. You know, we're a team that if we don't start hot, I think things can go bad quickly. So my optimistic prediction I'm going to give you guys is 10-6, second in the NFC West. My my not so optimistic position prediction is 7-9. So, you know, I feel like the Seahawks are still, I can't see them losing more than five games. I still think that they're going to be the division winner. And then, you know, the Niners, if they're able to go with 10-6, I think they'll be second with a wild card berth. You know, they have a tough stretch there on week 6 and 7. They play, the brother Harbaugh on the 18th of October, and then they go 4 days later, have to host the Seahawks on a Thursday night game. That is going to be a tough, tough stretch. And then we have the Rams right after that. So, you know, it could be really good or it could be really, really bad. We'll see.
I hate to rain on your parade, but it's going to be really, really bad. I've got you with one win before your bye week. And that one win is against those upstart Minnesota Vikings in week one. And then it's all downhill.
The Falcons
are my darlings this year. Have you not been listening to this podcast? You're fired.
Why would the Falcons anyone's darling?
The Minnesota, their defense is way better, and they just stole the top defensive coordinator in the league. You need to go back.
I thought Todd Bowles went to the Jets.
You need to go back and listen to some Nets fan ups, my friend. You got the Minnesota Vikings. I'm going to give you a win there. But you go across the coast to Pittsburgh. Then you're at Arizona. You're not winning either of those games. You host Green Bay. Green Bay is your Super Bowl contenders this year in the NFC. You go back across the country to New York, and it's a Sunday night game. At least you get the reprieve that it's a Sunday night game, but I'm not giving you the win there. Then you have to face the Ravens. You're not beating the Ravens. You're not beating Seattle, even though those games can go either way. Then you're at the Rams. That game could go either way. And then you have my darling Atlanta Falcons. You're not beating them. And then after that, your schedule gets a little bit easier, but there's a lot of division games in there. I just don't see it for the 49ers. I just don't see it.
If they go 1-8 before the bye, let's just say they're not going 1-8. There's too much talent on this roster to allow that to happen. The first three games against the Steelers and Cardinals, I feel like those can go either way. That Cardinals game was very, very close last year on week three. But, you know, we would go from a two tight end to four wide receivers the very next play. The offense had no identity last year. This year they will have an up-tempo identity. And I feel like, you know, at least before the bye, at worst, I'm saying 5-4.
Well, at worst. Good luck with that. You did mention you were boom or bust, I got you as the bust in this division. And like I said, Drew, I'm sorry I had you at 8-8. I think you'll probably be better than that 8-8 because I think the Cards are definitely a playoff contender, and clearly 8-8 isn't going to get the job done. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us here on the NFC West preview. As I teased earlier in this show, next week we will have the first ever super fan, all first team, all second team awards being given out to the best quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, etc. in the NFL. It's been an interesting conversation so far amongst our super fans. And we'll see if we can get those rosters up for you after we do the podcast next week. And hey, training camps are about to open. We're only a couple weeks away here. And then we're really going to be starting to talk a lot of football, and a lot of the things that we've just said are going to get erased, which will be fantastic. But we hope you've enjoyed these division previews. Like I said, if you missed any of them, you can check us out at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup, or you can download us on Twitter. Leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email. That would be nextfanup@gmail.com. Check us out on Twitter at NFU Podcast, and on Facebook, search Next Fan Up, or just go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. I'm Pod Vader. Those were the NFC West super fans. And as you know, I like to say, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.